Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I get to welcome to the show Lucas Root, who is an accomplished speaker, entrepreneur, and business success mentor, and he has over 19 years of success across a whole swath of areas: banking, technology, investments, health and wellness, athletics, and interactive media. Now, Lucas specializes in speaking to entrepreneurs and business owners about getting their strategy on track for success and growth. That is important now more than ever. And in his latest engagement, he was able to improve the business's revenue by 600% in his first year working with them, and there's more to come. So let me give you an idea about what we're talking about, because Lucas and I have a lot, Lucas has a lot to share. I'm just here to take notes and go, oh my gosh. So in this episode of Your Partner in Success Radio, Lucas is going to share tips and advice on building the business foundation, designing and building your core team, protecting the core of you and your business, how controlling sourcing, operations, and funding will significantly increase profits and propel your startup success. And he's going to give some direction on what specifically to outsource immediately to gain traction and time, and also tips and advice to help entrepreneurs, I can't say that word today, thrive, not just survive, by focusing their daily efforts on revenue-generating tasks. And this is important, and we may actually scrap some of the things that I just mentioned, because we really, really do need to talk about how we're coping now in this, whatever you want to call it, new normal, new abnormal, new way of doing business, and how side gigs and working from home and basically just being a good person and helping other people is probably one of the smartest things that you can do. So, Lucas, what I'm going to do is I'm basically going to turn this over to you, and we're going to go wherever you want to go with it, because there's so much going on, and everything that I listed we definitely need to talk about, but you know what? That might be another show. So, good morning. Welcome to the show. Start talking. I can't wait to hear what you have to say.
Good morning. I love it. I love scrapping things and trying something new. I love doing it in business. And, you know, I love it in this context, because I think that being agile, being flexible, and being able to respond to changing conditions, and that's, you know, at a market level, at a business level, and at a personal level, is one of the most valuable things that anybody can bring to anything they do.
Oh, so, I agree with you. Absolutely agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
So where do you want to start?
We came prepared for.
We did. And, you know, if we can get there, we'll get there. But if not, I will be delighted to invite you back, you know, maybe later in the year. I think I'm booking now for October and November. But let's go ahead and start with what we're dealing with. Yeah. What we're dealing with now, because, look, things are a mess. They're getting a little bit better. I think people are calming down and saying, you know what, the world did not end yesterday or last month. It's not going to end tomorrow. How do I make this work for me, for the people around me, for my business? So let's start there, because I am genuinely interested to see what you've got to say.
Cool. Yeah, and not just survive, but thrive.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I think that... I built a little framework and wrote an article about this. I think that people go through a process kind of like the process of dealing with grief or loss or anger. They go through a process when they're making any significant changes. The first step of that process is that they're distracted by everything. And that's because they're sort of still getting into the new, you know, their version of the new normal. And then the second step of that process is that they go way, way, way too deep. And this is true for work from home. This is also true for, you know, reading a new book or you know, getting into a new skill. You go way too deep, and other areas of your life sort of get left by the wayside a little bit. And to some degree, that's a detriment. So from a work from home perspective, what we see is you know, on day one through day 10, right? You sit down at your desk and you open up Facebook because that's what you do every day that you sit down at that desk. But we're now working from home, and sitting down at your work desk to open up Facebook is actually going to result in lower productivity for the next 4 hours. and then we move into this second phase where we go way too deep. And this is something that's been sort of romanticized and glorified by Silicon Valley for the last couple of decades, where, you know, a coder might get into a coding groove that lasts 16 hours, right? And while I really value what somebody can do when they sit down and they finish an idea right from start to finish, I'd like to point out that if you get into a coding groove for 16 hours and you forget to eat, you forget to go to the bathroom, you've just traded an entire week of productivity for one 16-hour chunk. And maybe that's worth it. Maybe it's not. That's a decision that you need to make with a clear mind before that happens. And that's the getting into deep part. And then coming out of that, people will start to build skills. And again, I think this is a framework that applies to almost everything. They'll build skills, they'll build routines. They'll build mechanisms into their life to make sure that they continue to move forward and they don't go too deep. So in work from home, what we see is people start building routines, like a morning routine and an evening routine and a couple of breaks throughout the day, so that, you know, they're telling their body, their psyche, that the day has started, right? And then they start being productive for a while. And then at the end of the day, they tell their body that the day has ended. And their body has this smooth transition, similar to what you'd expect in a normal workday going to the office. The body has the smooth transition from work to not work.
Hadn't even thought of that. That's brilliant.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted. And then once you get settled into sort of the first set of skills and routines, then you start to tinker with them. And this is phase four. And phase four is where you start to move through levels of mastery in that skill or that business process or life approach that you're trying to implement, right? And again, I think this framework is applicable to just about any change that you're making. And when you start to tinker, that's when you really start to become high productivity in that thing, start creating huge amounts of value in yourself and in the way that you approach that thing, that skill. So in work from home, what we see is instead of having your kick off the day routine at 8 a.m., maybe you try it at 7 a.m. and you see if your biorhythms can match with the morning routine. And maybe you change your morning routine a little bit. Me, for instance, I don't shower first thing in the morning anymore. I used to. Now I don't. Now I shower at 11 o'clock in the morning. I've found through this tinkering process that I get a lot of really good work done before I shower. And it's high productivity, it's real smooth sailing, and it's based on work that I had started yesterday, right? And so this is this sort of working with the biorhythms thing. If I take my shower in the morning, all of the thinking and productive improvement that I built in my mind on these problems that I started yesterday, they get sort of, I don't know why, but this is just the way it works.
Away.
They get sort of, yeah, they get washed away.
They do, yeah. I find, let me interrupt for just a second, I find that, and I've done this for years, I turn over before I go to sleep, whatever I'm, sleeping is difficult for me, so I always know just about when I'm, you know, about to pass out. I know when that moment's coming because I'm guarding it. It's like, can I sleep now? Can let me read a book. But what happens is when I know I'm finally going to drop off to sleep, I will say a quick prayer, say my gratitude, and have a quick chat with my subconscious where I turn over whatever it is that's bothering me, whatever didn't get done, whatever question I need a good answer to. I turn that over to my subconscious for review. I wake up at 3:18 every morning, doesn't matter what time I went to bed, and I have that answer. But I'm like you. If I start the day running around, I do brush my teeth. I will do that. But I don't try to, you know, get completely ready for the day because my subconscious is feeding me a lot of information and I don't want to break that flow. So is that about what you're thinking about?
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
All right.
I have to ask you very quickly. Go ahead.
Yeah, very quickly. My voice is raspy and I'm muting it. Do you hear me coughing on you? I hope you don't.
No.
Oh, good. My
Not
mute is working. Okay, keep going. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't being very rude.
So you discover that, you discover the way that your biorhythms work with your with whatever it is that you're trying to implement. We'll talk deeper about work from home. But again, this is a framework that applies to just about everything. The way you discover that is by implementing something, you know, in, let's call it phase three, implementing something basic to help you move forward. And then in phase four is when you start tinkering with those things that you implemented to help you move forward, right? So you move around your morning routine, you make some changes. It turns out, me personally, I don't like to do a heavy workout in the morning. I like to do a heavy workout at noon. I know other people that like to do their heavy workout in the evening. You don't figure that stuff out until you start tinkering, and you don't figure out how your body responds to that until you start tinkering. That's the four phases, right? Number one is everything's a distraction. Number two is super deep groove, which can be valuable when you use it strategically. But I recommend using it only strategically, that super deep groove. Number three is like beginning routines. And number four is customization, tinkering, really trying to fit those routines, those skills to the way that you want to approach that new thing in your life. Now,
exactly.
Work from home.
And I love what you're saying about your biorhythms, because I've worked from home for a very long time. And I wanted to train myself to, you know, the 9-to-5, 8-to-5, whatever it was. That did not work. I have found over time, it didn't. Just, I was my own worst boss. But I have found over time that in the morning, I am raring. Excuse me. I am kicking butt all over the place. By about 2 in the afternoon, I'm done. I am drained. It's over. So I basically shut down. I go work in the yard. I may read a book. Who knows what I'm going to do. But about 7 o'clock in the evening, I'm right back at it. And I finally just gave in and went with that routine. And from about 7 to about 11 p.m., I am kicking stuff all over the place. I'm on fire. 2 o'clock until about 7 o'clock, I might as well be in a deep coma. I'm done. It's strange, but it works for me.
Yeah. That's funny. That's a similar timing approach to the day as what I have. I get up at 5. I do a morning routine. I start working more or less promptly at 6 as soon as my morning routine is over. I do really high productivity work from 6 to 11 in the morning. 11 o'clock, I take a break, and that's when I do my shower. Sort of the noon routine gets kicked off about 11. Sometimes I push it back to noon if things are going on or if I have calls. And then I get a couple of hours, sometimes two, sometimes three of productivity after my midday routine. And then just like you, Denise, I crash usually around 3:30. And I'm down for 4 or 5 hours. And then if I want to, I can pick back up. But typically 4 or 5 hours after 3 o'clock, you know, is social time. So obviously now during COVID, social time is off the table. But during my normal life, I work pretty hard to include social as part of my daily routine. But I'd like to talk about how you start, what that phase three looks like for people. In this article that I wrote, that's what I call the newbie to pro approach. The newbie approach is what you mentioned, Denise. It's what does it look like to build a 9-to-5 day with intention so that it's successful for you? And my recommendation is, number one, start out looking like a normal day at the office. Get up, eat breakfast, take a shower, shave, put on work clothes. And I realize everybody is not putting on work clothes. I've been surprised to see.
Well, I do.
Yeah,
I absolutely.
I think.
Well, you know why? You know, you can tell. I spend a lot of time with voices. I listen. I'm constantly interacting with people's voices. And you can hear a smile. You can hear when somebody is, you know, they're really interacting with you. You can also tell when they're kind of grungy. You really can, because you can almost feel they're slumped. They're not paying attention. They're not taking good care of themselves. There's a lot that you can pick up by the way somebody sounds. So I agree with you. Get up, get dressed. I'm a nerd in stilettos. I actually have high-heeled sandals on right now. When we're done, I'm going to kick them off and put on my Crocs and go dig in the mud. But right now, I've got my stilettos on, and I'm happy.
That's perfect. Yeah. I agree. You can hear when somebody's smiling. And there's another piece to this, which we'll come back to. But, you know, it surprised me to see how many pictures on the internet of national broadcasters who have, you know, the camera pans out a little bit and you see that he's wearing a suit top and no pants.
I know. It's funny, but it's really not. Yeah. But make sure that you have, you know, decent clothing on, not a thong. Just don't wear a thong.
Yeah. So, yeah, put on work clothes. Don't just put on your morning clothes. Put on work clothes. Drink your coffee. And then, here's a big one that people probably are not thinking about. You still need to commute. I realize that you're just commuting from, you know, your kitchen over to your work desk, but your body has grown to expect that you have a 20-minute, 30-minute break in your morning, during which time you have free open mind space. And that's incredibly valuable for all sorts of different reasons. But from a newbie perspective, your body is used to you commuting, and the process of getting into the work frame of mind has part of that commute. So go outside, take a 20-minute commute walk, and call it that if you need to. Take it. Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
20-minute commute walk, and then sit down at your desk and start your day. Start your day with the same sorts of things you normally would. While you're checking your email, call your coworker that sits in the cubicle next to you that you would normally lean over the cubicle and have a chat with while you're checking your email at first thing in the morning. So continue to do those things. Do a couple of hours of work. Take a mid-morning break just like you would while you're at work. Do a 5-minute commute walk. And again, call it that. Like, say it out loud, a commute walk to the cafe. I realize you're only going to your kitchen, but go outside, take a few minutes of walking, come back in, get your morning coffee, go outside, take a few minutes of walking, come back in, sit down at your desk. Your body will thank you. There are all sorts of reasons why these breaks are incredibly valuable from a productivity standpoint, but the most important one is that these are the routines that you've trained your body to expect from you, right? Morning commute into the office, 10 o'clock commute out to the coffee place and back, a noon commute out to your favorite lunch spot, get a coworker on a Zoom call at noon to have a lunch conversation with them, just like you might do while you're at work, a 2 o'clock commute out to the coffee place and back. And then at the end of the day, you need that 20-minute, 30-minute commute walk to get you ready to come home, right? So again, get up from your desk, go outside, take a 20-minute commute walk, come home, take off your work clothes, right? And this is sort of closing that chapter. You open the chapter by putting on your work clothes and taking a 20-minute commute. That puts you into the brain space. You close the chapter by taking off your work clothes and doing that 20-minute commute. And that puts you into your home brain space. And your body is used to this. So continue giving it what it needs.
See, this is absolutely brilliant. And because I've worked at home so long, none of this occurred to me. And I mean none. It just, my commute is constantly I'm tripping over cats. So my commute is a hazard walk. You know, they're like, feed me, pet me, love me. Okay. But I've always just in my office is across the house, which is terrific. But I had to actually learn back in the early days to close the darn door to my office, or I'd be going, ooh, let me run in there. Ooh. You know, this was before I had iPads and, you know, I could email myself and all of that. But I'm telling you, I had to physically close the door to keep my Fanny out of here. Or I would work all the time. And I did experience some pretty hefty burnout at one point, and I did it to myself, but I wasn't taking care of that space. You know, I was working all the time. I'm a workaholic, and I like to say that I'm a recovering workaholic. I would be lying to you, so I'm not going to say it. But I am better about taking those breaks and recognizing when I'm exhausted. And when I'm looking at my monitor and I'm seeing stuff floating in front of me, it's time to walk off. So those of us who work from home, we kind of get this, but here's a quick question, and I hope I'm not interrupting too much, because I wrote this down when you first started talking, but people who are working from home who have to kind of log in all the time or check in with their employers who are, they're struggling as much as everybody is trying to figure out how to work this without being just too overbearing, too antagonistic, too bossy, yeah. I guess. So there's a lot of things going on right now. So, but I think from what I'm hearing from a lot of people, Lucas, is that many employers and many, you know, businesses who have their employees working from home now don't really understand that biorhythm. You know, some people simply are not going to work well at 2 o'clock. Doesn't matter how many breaks they had. Some people need to work at 11 o'clock. So how do we fix that? I mean, how do we kind of allow people to find out when they're their most productive, when they can really knock out the work, unless of course it's, you're in a call center and you have to be there at a certain time. But I mean, are there ways to work this out?
Yeah,
I think it's
absolutely
a big conundrum. I really do. I think it's a big, big deal.
Yep. So I'm glad you brought up the call center. Here's what I think that employers need to be worried about while they're trying to figure out how to build policies and procedures and rules inside the business that employees can engage with in order to continue moving this forward, right? Because work from home, prior to COVID, it was an average of 3% of corporate employees, 3% who had full-time work from home, and only an additional 4%, so a total of 7% of people who had the option, right? Half of whom were exercising that option, but it was only 7% of people who had the option to work from home whenever they needed to. That's going to change.
No kidding. I think that a lot of people working from home now, with any luck at all, and if it works well for them, can continue to do so.
Mm-hmm. So here are the things that I think an employer needs to be thinking about. And we can give some guidance on how to think about this stuff as well. But at the very baseline, you need to start thinking about this. Number one, is the job of your team something that's possible to work from home? I would argue that a call center is actually possible to work from home, but there are other jobs that are not, let's say janitorial jobs, which are going to be changing if there are less people in the office, right? But it's still a good example of a job that simply can't be done without your physical presence, right? So is it possible? Number two, this is a big one. This is key. Does this job require creativity and innovation? And the reason that I'm asking that question is this. Right now, we have trained our social approach to innovation. Now, this will change, right? But at the moment, our social approach to innovation requires a wide degree of varied interactions across your corporation. Again, this will change, but it's going to change slowly. It took a long time for us to get to the point where the average rank-and-file member of a corporation was allowed to engage with innovation at the corporate level, right? We got there. Now people can bubble up ideas, and those ideas actually start to see traction. But those ideas come from a wide degree of varied interaction. And as long as that's a necessary part of your corporate approach to the world, right, of your brand, of your capacity to continue to drive your corporation in this marketplace, you probably need to continue to have your employees show up. So does your job require in-person presence, for either it can only be done in person, or because your team needs innovation and thus relatively frequent co-location to drive that innovation? Okay. Number three, does your team have the capacity to be able to engage with online productivity tools, regardless of which tools you create? And number four, does your management structure inside your corporation have rules and policies and guidelines that allows your team to be productive outside of the office? Those four things.
And it's not just corporations. You know, we can also extend this to educators. I mean, for the most part, from what I'm seeing, they are doing a fantastic job. The teachers have kind of, my sister is the president of a school board in her town, and she is just waxing eloquent about how the teachers, the educators, jumped in and said, we got this. And they started with Zoom, and they started creating all these different things. They did not let those kids sit around and say, what's that? You know, what's next? I mean, they jumped in and fixed it. I'm pretty impressed.
Yeah, I agree. Teachers are amazing. The skill set to be a successful teacher is a phenomenal skill set, and I have tremendous respect for teachers. And, you know, as we mentioned earlier, being able to be flexible is probably one of the most valuable things anybody can bring to any part of their life, right? And
Absolutely. Being
a successful teacher requires, like, significant flexibility all the time. So it's been amazing to be able to see them.
Yes, very much. Let's go back to what you were saying, you know, about how we train people, how we kind of streamline these processes. I'm getting the sense from different podcasts that I've done and different questions that I've been asking is, you know, when this started, that a lot of employers are just saying, they're running around going, oh, geez, now what do we do? Because it's brand new for them. I mean, they're having to interact with people maybe in the business that they've seen them in the hallway, but they don't really know who they are or what they're all about or what their skill sets are. What do you think? Let's go back just a little bit. And how do you think employers are doing with this, and how can we help them? Because the bosses, you know, the vice presidents, whoever, I get the impression that some of them need more help than the actual employees do. Or am I just way off base?
No, I think you're completely right. You know, I've been an executive, a vice president in corporate world. I'm not currently, but I have. And at the time, if I took a work from home day, that was big air quotes. And I don't mind admitting this completely outright. If I was working from home, it was, I'm taking a day off while I'm still checking my email, right? And this is the thing that other half of the people that have available work from home or had prior to COVID that they were doing is they would go home and they would stay relatively online, but it was an offline day while they're online. So their experience at the management level, their experience of what working from home really means, their experience of it is a day off while I'm online, a day off checking email, a day off getting on phone calls. So it's not a vacation day, but it's not a real work day.
More of a mental health day, I would think.
Yeah. and it was needed, right? If I was doing that, it was because I'd been traveling all week and I was freaking exhausted. say I had a huge deliverable midday Thursday and I worked until 11 p.m. on Tuesday and Wednesday to make sure I got through it all. if I took one of those big air quote work from home days, it's not because I didn't need it. It's not because I didn't deserve it, right? But what these corporate level managers and VPs are interacting with in their experience of working from home is the notion that it's not a real work day. And that's just not true, right? You and I, we both know it. We've gotten to the point where we're able to be consistently productive day after day in our work from home routine. So step one,
right,
we have to change their perception of what's possible. And that has to happen in every direction, right? People talk about top down or bottom up. Throw that to the side. We have to change this perception in every direction, top down, bottom up, right, left, forward, back. everybody needs to engage with a new perception. And the new perception is that if you have the right routines and the right processes and policies in place, working from home can be every bit as productive as working in an office. And you and I, we would argue that, in fact, as you get good at it, it can be significantly more productive than working in an office.
Absolutely.
So baseline change perception.
Right, but, and this is important because I'm seeing so much of this, you know, complaints and concerns on different forums and places that I kind of poke my head in and see what's going on. Too many bosses are just saying, look, this is the way we've always done things. We want you at your desk at 9 o'clock. We want to install spyware. You need to go into Trello, tell us what you're doing. They're little Gestapos, it seems like. That is not going to work. If you want, and the word you just used, engagement, is so, so important. Engagement and creativity, I think, are the two most important things that we need to really encourage right now, wherever we are. And if you're trying to maintain a tight control over people that are no longer, you know, walking down the hall towards you, you're going to fail, and fail big.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's long been discussion about how counterproductive micromanaging is, right? And now is a great time to shine a spotlight on the teams that are not micromanaging and how productive those teams are. I mean, at the corporate level, do some A/B testing. Look at which managers are natural micromanagers and continuing to micromanage, and look at the productivity of those teams. And then look at the managers that are not micromanagers, that trust their teammates, that trust the people that they're working with and working for them to get their job done, however, right? And look at how productive those people are. And if you really want to throw another level in there, engage with some of those not micromanagement team leads and have them implement some policies that protect the productive capacity of their team and see how much further that productivity is. And that's what we'll talk about next, right?
Yeah. Can you give me some examples? Because my brain just went on fire.
Okay. So first, communications policy. I would start by saying emails. From now on, the response expectation of an email is 24 hours. It's no longer 5 minutes. You're sitting at your desk. You should see my email. You should respond. No. Use an email for 24-hour response expectations. Number two, internal text messaging tools like Slack. Internal text messaging tools now have a 1 hour response expectation. We can talk about why, and I will. Number three, phone call, right? If something is really blowing up, truly, and let's be honest, in the business world, the idea of something blowing up is probably far more rare than you think it is at the management level. But if something is truly blowing up, and it needs an answer right this second, phone call, right? That's when you make a phone call. You don't send an email. You don't send a text message. You make a phone call. But it has to be hypercritical. It has to be important enough to interrupt the task that your team is doing in order for that phone call to be that important. And I say that because in the productivity world, it's well known that switching tasks requires 15 minutes. I'm not saying it because I like it to take 15 minutes. I'm saying it because that is the established statistic, 15 minutes. So in order for you to engage with me on something that I'm not working on already right now, it's going to take me 15 minutes to get spun up on that new thing. And then I'll do it. And when I'm done, I have to go back to the thing that I was working on before. And that's going to cost another 15 minutes to get spun up on it. Right. So,
you know,
if you're
I would say it's longer than 15 minutes because you have to get past the irritation factor. So that's five or six
yeah.
minutes right there. And then you have to go, okay, fine, I'll go do it. So let's say 20 just to be on the safe side.
Sure. So keep in mind, you as the employer, when you're micromanaging somebody, when you're pinging them every 15 minutes, asking them what they're working on, if you actually do ping somebody every 15 minutes and actually expect them to put eyes on your message and respond to you, realize that every time you do that, it costs 20 minutes of productivity, which means if you do that every 15 minutes all day long, and each time you do it, it costs 20 minutes of productivity, you get to the end of the day, and they will have gotten nothing done, because you interrupted their productive capacity more often than they can spin up on a task. I'm not saying this because I don't want people to be successful working from home. I'm saying this because this is established fact. It takes 15 to 20 minutes to get spun up on a new task. And if you interrupt that, it takes 15 to 20 minutes to get spun up on a new task. And if you interrupt that, it takes 15 minutes to get spun up on a new task. You see where I'm going with this?
Oh, yeah.
So, communication policies, number one. Now, for email, get really good at making concise lists, right? Just like I laid out my framework in a list. Step one, distraction. Step two, deep grooves. Step three, basic routines. Step four, customization, right? Get really good at building lists. Because you're expecting a response, now communication policy is 24 hours at email. Because you're expecting 24 hours for the response on that email, you need to be able to put in the right level of detail for your team to be able to engage with it, right? So, Denise, here are three things that I want you to be able to address in the next 24 hours. Lucas, here are three things that I want you to be able to address in the next 24 hours. Send, right? Don't follow up with them. Trust your team to get it done. 24-hour communication. Two, text message. I told you an hour. There's a reason for that. Humans work very, very well with specific blocks of time that range from 30 minutes to 70 minutes, right? You know this. You've found this out through your own self-experimentation with your own working from home. 30 minutes to 70 minutes on one single task. So if you include spin-up time of 20 minutes, right? 20 minutes to spin up, 30 minutes to complete, that's 50 minutes to get one complex task completed. So the text message communication policy of 1 hour allows one person to completely finish the work that they have just started before they respond to your text message. And that's what you need as a manager. You need to allow your team to finish a task, right?
Absolutely.
So that's that text message of 1 hour. And then there's the phone call, right? If everything is truly going to hell, pardon my language, truly, right? There are things that are actually burning down. And again, in the corporate world, let's be honest here, that's not usually what's happening. When we talk about fire drills, we're talking about things that can wait 24 hours or even 48 hours. It feels urgent, but it probably isn't as urgent as it feels most of the time. When it truly is urgent, truly is critical, truly is right now, that's when you escalate to a phone call and you have your team understand that if you're calling them, it actually is an emergency and they either need to get the phone or if they miss the call, because let's say they were in the bathroom or they were, you know, I pace when I'm talking myself through some tasks, honestly. I get up from my desk, I pace in the living room and I talk myself through some tasks and I miss phone calls from time to time because of it. As soon as I'm done with that portion of my task work, I'm still going to look at my phone and I'm going to say, oh, I missed a phone call from my boss. I'm going to have to go call him back right now, right? So expect people to be doing what's best for them, right? So that's your baseline communication policy. Number two, tools. Excuse me. I love all these online productivity tools that are popping up that allow people to sort of log in and have a little virtual office that they sit in so that people can drop in and it pops them onto a video conference, right? One of the nice things about the open door office policy that's been quite popular in corporate world in the last couple of decades is that you actually can drop in on your boss or one of your boss's colleagues, another manager, and say, hey, listen, I'm working through this thing. Can you give me some help? it's an incredibly valuable tool to be able to continue doing that from home. But it needs to be unidirectional. Don't drop in on your employee. If you drop in on your employee, if you drop in on your team, you are interrupting the task that they're working on right now. You have to let them come to you. Set up a meeting. Let them come to you. Send them a text message. It's an hour response. Let them come back to you. So this approach to using tools, and I love the tools that are coming out, but this approach to using tools needs to follow the same general baseline as the communication policy, and that is that once somebody has started a task, they need to be allowed to finish it. Next level, right? And this is where you think the real juice is here, Denise. The next level is, how do we allow employees to start figuring out where their biorhythm creates maximum productivity? The short answer is, it's going to be a while before corporations start engaging with that. However, I think that, and this is just speculation, but I'm sure that this is the way it's going to work out. I think that the market's going to start spinning things up in the same way that the market has put out things for, like, what kind of, what's your astrological profile? What's your personality profile? And corporations have started to use that information to better engage with each employee. You know, personality profile allows the manager.
Personality, yeah. I knew, but astrological, really? That's interesting.
I'm seeing it. I've seen even that. You know, it has to be in a pretty progressive organization, but I really like it. You know, if you know that your employee is, let's say, an Aries, it's true that that same information might exist inside a personality profile, but at the management level, you engage with people from your experience. And if your experience is with personality tests, use those. If your experience is with the astrological profile, use those.
Gotcha.
We're going to start seeing the same sorts of tools that people are using to do a personality profile on themselves for biorhythm. And as those tools start to pop up, I strongly encourage corporations to be significantly proactive in rolling those out. I don't necessarily expect that that's the case, right? I expect corporations to lag the market, right? But I'd love to see corporations lead the market in the use of those tools. And what's going to happen is we're going to see corporations implementing tools that allow people to move around different pieces of their general daily routine, right? Morning routine, mid-morning coffee, noon break, mid-afternoon coffee, end-of-day routine. If we move those pieces around and we work with our employees to start engaging with how to increase their productivity by moving those pieces around, we're going to have corporate productivity tools that track at the data level across their corporation, that track the increase in productivity, especially for employees that are doing things that are more or less widgets, like a coder, right? Somebody who's doing a lot of coding or dev work. If you let people like that start to move around pieces of their day, you're probably going to see uptick or downtick in productivity fairly quickly, and you're probably going to be able to start collecting data on that to help your employee maximize the productivity of their day fairly quickly. The same goes for creatives, right? I know people
don't like
to think about.
We're both creative.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to understand when you are one. It took me the longest kind of time. You know why? Because I can't draw a straight line. I thought I didn't have any creativity at all. You should see my hangman. He looks like he has scoliosis. It's terrible. But it finally occurred to me that I am enormously creative. I don't know why I didn't know. But once I figured that out, all bets were off. Get out of my way.
Yeah. So creatives, like people who are doing marketing, people who are building, who are doing pictures, who are doing layouts. Let's talk about like magazine layouts. That's incredibly creative work. It's like putting together a puzzle. So anybody who is creative, the same as a developer or coder, you allow them to start moving their day around and you're going to see a change in their productivity very quickly. Take me, for example. Like you, Denise, I start my day early. I have a huge productivity bump that ends at about 11 o'clock. If I'm at a 9-to-5 job, I only get 2 hours of that 6-hour productivity chunk. That's it. My job only gets 2 hours of that. Now, that's okay with me. I use the rest of that time for my own personal productivity, right? I do my writing. Maybe I do a blog, right? Ever bother me that my job wasn't getting the maximum amount of my creativity? But I'll tell you what, as a manager, I thought about that for my teams. Am I losing their productivity just like my management team is losing mine? Question to ask, and it's an important one. So creatives, like developers, anyone who's working on widgets, you're going to see that productivity change very quickly as you allow people to start moving their day around. It's a little bit hard to engage as a manager who believes that a work from home day is really just a day off. And that's why I said the very first thing we have to engage with is that perception that a work from home day is just an online day off. It's not. But as soon as you start engaging with that, then you can tinker at the management level, you can tinker with how to build and protect the productivity of your team long-term. Number one, communication policy. Number two, allow them to move around pieces of their day.
And you know what, Lucas, I can almost hear a manager saying, you know, if I've got a lunatic like Denise who's working at 11 o'clock at night, and I admit that I'm a bit of a loony, you can't hang around with me because you're in bed. You know, you've done your 9-to-5 and I'm out here doing whatever it is that I'm going to be doing. My question to you, Lucas, is does a manager who is really willing to tinker and bring out the best in their team, wherever their team is and whatever it is that they're doing, do they bring in somebody to act as let's call them a night manager? You know, say, hey, you know, if you need, you can't reach me, you can reach Ralph over here. Is that maybe viable?
It is absolutely viable.
Oh, good. But then again, you're also saying, and I agree with you, trust your people. Look, I have a team that's scattered all over the place. Some are in America, some are in Canada. I've got one or two that are somewhere else entirely. I trust them. You know what I do? And I had to really work with myself on this because I'm a know-it-all. I'm a bossy person. You know, I'm just all of those really unpleasant things. And I had to realize that in order for me to get the best out of my team, even though I'm able to say, okay, I need for you to do this because I know how to do it, I actually look for people who are better at something than I am. That way I really trust them because I don't have to train them. So anyway, that was just a quick thought.
I love it. I think, and this is a challenging opinion to have, and I've been a manager, so I know it's challenging. I am a manager now. I manage several different teams. I think that every manager should always look for people who are better at the task they're hiring for than they are themselves.
Yes.
It's not always possible.
I agree.
And that's okay. But
and
yeah,
sometimes you know, you can find somebody who has that, you think, oh, there's a spark there. And you really work with them to come out of their shell and say, oh, I'm a little afraid of Denise. I don't want to, you know, rock the boat. You don't need to be. If you are really good and you've got terrific suggestions, I'm asking you for them. Show me a better way to do something that I'm doing right now. Show me your productivity and your genius and your creativity, and we're going to get along just fine for a very long time.
Yeah, we are.
Let's go back to the night manager thing. I can't wait to see what you, because that just popped up, and I went, that would work.
Yeah, a night manager is a great approach. And you can do that at the corporate level to leverage that capacity, a night manager, somebody that escalations can go to late at night or early in the morning. You can leverage that across the corporation so that the team lead has different people that they can rely on to pitch in when they're not available. One, but two, and this is the real key, and you already mentioned it, right? The real key is you got to trust your people. You have to trust them to, one, trust their own work and finish their own work and give you the best that they have. But also, number two, you have to trust them to come to you when they need help. And they know, just like you do.
Right.
Yeah. They know, just like you know, that nothing is burning down right now. So for somebody like you, Denise, who's working until 11 o'clock, if you run into a roadblock at, let's say, 10 o'clock, and there's still an hour worth of productivity left, well, you'll just stop that task where it is. Yes, maybe you can escalate it to the night manager if one's in, you know, if one's available. But if one's not, you can just stop and move on to the next task and continue to move forward on another task, right? Remember, I said, when you send out that email, give a list so that your employees can engage across that list within the communication policies that you have, because that communication policy goes in both directions. You're not bothering your employees. They're also not bothering you. So they'll move forward on one or two or three tasks over the course of the day. And if they hit a roadblock that they can't move forward on one of them, they'll just move on to the next one. And they'll send out a flare, a soft flare, right? They'll send an email to you saying, here's the roadblock, and you'll get back to them within 24 hours on how to move forward past that roadblock or what it is that you're doing to remove that roadblock for them. If that happens at 10 p.m. or 3 a.m., doesn't matter because they have other things they can work on, number one, and you will get to that when you can, number two.
Right. And you know what may happen? Sometimes if you just give your brain a rest and say, yeah, I'm stuck, I can't do anything with this, the answer is probably going to pop up when you do what I call a refrigerator. Well, let me back up. I call this my open refrigerator door syndrome. We all walk over to the refrigerator or our coffee station, whatever it is, whatever you want to call it. I have double doors. So I open both those doors, I stick my head in there, and I am blank. I just meditated because I have no thought in my head at all. But it gives me rest. It shuts down that fevered thought that was bugging me. And eventually I'm going to go back and go, oh, well, there's the answer. Thank you. And off I go.
That's right. Open the refrigerator. You mentioned this before, and I think it's an incredibly powerful tool. You load your mind up with some problems to solve. And then, as you said, Denise, you have a little conversation with your subconscious just before you go to sleep. Your subconscious loves to solve problems. Your subconscious is phenomenally good at churning through challenges. And then you get up in the morning and you have that answer right there waiting for you.
Every time, without fail.
Every time.
Yep. And
but
with me, it's 3:18 in the morning. It pops up and I go, ooh.
That's funny.
And I'm writing something down and I may be able to go back to sleep. Maybe not. But I've got my answer without fail.
Yep. But that only happens when you trust the process. Am I right?
Oh, gosh, yes. And I do. I trust my subconscious way smarter than I am because I've got all these biases, conscious or unconscious, that are, you know, leading me down whatever path I'm going to go down that day. But my subconscious, yeah, it's pretty neutral. So, yeah, I trust
it. Yeah. And then the other process, right, you as a manager, Denise, the same goes for your team. You trust the process for them. They trust the process for you. It's bidirectional trust. And because of the fact that A, you trust the process, and B, they trust the process, you can allow them to engage with their problems in exactly the same way that you do. Load it up. Have that little conversation with the subconscious. Disconnect, right? Sleeping's a great way to disconnect, but it's not the only one. Disconnect. Let your subconscious process that problem and then reconnect. Waking up is a great way to reconnect, but it's not the only way, right?
So when people they're stuck, and I'm seeing this a lot and sadly, but I'm hoping that you're right, that those tools that allow people to work when they need to be working, when you know, we have IQ tools, we have EQ tools, we have, you know, all these personality tools. And I love your idea for, you know, setting up new tools or creating new tools that will let us figure out, even we don't know what's going to work until we just do it. So sometimes we have to break that training. But my thinking is that once managers, employers, employees, teams, whatever you want to call yourselves, once you feel freed up to be creative, number one, and to have access to more brains and more empathy and more sources, resources, I think in many, many ways, this is going to grow into something rather fabulous. I'm not at all worried. Maybe I should be, but I'm not.
I completely agree.
Oh, good. Good, good, good.
I completely agree. Look, we've had corporations engaging with the idea of 24-hour work already, but they do it by applying the 9-to-5 work day across different time zones. So somebody can work on something for their 9-to-5 and then pass it off to the next team that's starting their 9 a.m. at your 5 p.m., right? So corporations have already engaged with the idea that a work widget, right, a workflow can exist in relative perpetuity across a time. So this is not a new idea. It's just a new approach to the same idea. I would preferentially select employees, even in the same time zone as me, who both work early mornings, like I do, and work, you know, late morning, early afternoon, evenings, just because that's where their peak biorhythm productivity is. And if they want to work their evening hours, and I have other people that want to work their morning hours, now I have the opportunity as a team lead to engage with a team that has 18 hours of productivity without having to force them to sit in their seats for 18 hours. The team already is self-selecting for that.
Right. I love that idea. Let's go back to email very quickly, because you said something so important about, you know, get the list, do this, do that. I'm going to add a little bit to it. I belong simply in the keep it simple, stupid camp of just about everything, podcasting, everything. And one of my big concerns with emails is you just go into too much detail. Keep it simple. A paragraph is fine. Bullet points are terrific. And do not send them back and forth and back and forth, back and forth. Those, especially in Gmail, once you've answered that thing so many times and maybe the person on the other end has deleted it, it's truncated, it gets lost, it's a mess. Start a fresh one if you need to. That's just one of my big gripes. Keep it simple, stupid. And don't keep returning it back and forth forever and a day. It's destructive, actually.
I agree. That's a great way to approach it. Other tools that are really useful for that sort of communication, me personally and with my team, I use OneNote. One of the things I love about OneNote is that it syncs the information across the team dynamically. So I can build what we're talking about into an email, or I could build it into OneNote, and then I just put it into my OneNote and leave it there. You could do the same thing with SharePoint, right? There's all sorts of different tools for information sharing. I love the functionality of OneNote, so I'll build that list, I'll pass it off to my team, they'll engage with the list, each of them at their own level, and that information syncs real time, so that I can see the way that they're engaging with it. And there's none of this email lost, delete, truncation, right? It all just sits there in OneNote and updates continuously.
And that is a terrific way to do it, because email can get just so messy.
Yeah. Yeah, it really can. Now, each team is going to have productivity tools that work well for them. I use OneNote that way. It works very well for me and for my team. My team didn't love it when they first started. They have grown to love it over the course of working with me. And, you know, many of the people that I work with, some of the people I work with are full-time, but many of the people I work with are gig workers. And I've asked them if they're using OneNote for their other gigs, and many of them have said, yes, we've started to implement a similar process and a similar tool set to the way you use OneNote in our other work. And I'm like, this is fantastic. So I love the way that I set up OneNote in my team. I love the way that the OneNote functionality engages with my communication policies, right? Nothing is urgent. Most things can wait 24 hours. I will build a list. You can engage with that list alongside me, even when we're not in the same room.
I would love for you to come back maybe on a special, you know, not the usual Friday, and talk to us more about that, because there are so many things that we're just saying, okay, use this, don't use this, and just, oh my gosh. Would you come back on a special and maybe we can do a Zoom and you can kind of build one for us? Or am
yeah,
I asking too much?
Great.
Okay.
No, not
Let's
at all.
Let's do
that'd
that, because if you could do a little quick training, I think that would be so helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be awesome.
Great.
I look forward to it.
Wonderful. I don't normally ask people of that, but you've just given so many ideas. And at this point, they can be a little bit nebulous, but if somebody can see what you're saying, they might go, oh, that'll work. And anything that's going to help all of us is wonderful. Listen, we actually ran out of time. I knew this was going to happen. So let me ask you this. Will you come back on a regular podcast later on in the year and we'll talk about what we were planning on talking about, or if we need to, you know, scoot that one out of the way and continue where we are here, we'll figure that out. But could I get you to come back maybe October, November, December?
Absolutely, Denise. I would love to.
Oh, fantastic. Listen, before I let you go, where can people find you?
I'm very active on both LinkedIn and Instagram. My Instagram profile is at Luke Root, LUCROOT, no dots, no underscores, all one word. And then in LinkedIn, you can find me, just search for Lucas Root or LinkedIn /IM/ Luke Root.
Great. Lucas, thank you. I have thoroughly enjoyed speaking with you today, and you speak so much of my language. I was sitting here bouncing up in my chair, go, me, and I was trying not to interrupt, but I did manage to interrupt anyway, and I apologize for that. But thank you for all of the wonderful tips and advice, and you know, I really look forward to speaking with you again.
Yeah, me too. Thank you, Denise.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us in iTunes and really anywhere else you consume your business podcasts. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Lucas, thank you.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.